Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. Family members of Kate Steinle testified in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday to address crime and safety issues regarding undocumented immigration. Steinle was tragically killed on July 1st in San Francisco, allegedly by an undocumented immigrant from Mexico named Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez. Sanchez is a multiple felon who reportedly re-entered the U.S. without papers several times and was on probation in Texas when the incident happened. In an interview on local television, he claimed he returned to San Francisco because he knew he wouldn't be turned in to immigration authorities. Sanchez's statement has been turned into the focus of a major right-wing media campaign to denounce what are being called sanctuary cities in the U.S. Presidential candidate Donald Trump jumped on the incident to confirm his publicly stated views that undocumented immigrants from Mexico are, quote, rapists and criminals. At stake at the Senate committee hearing is how federal immigration enforcement officials interact with local law enforcement. Joining me in studio today are Claudia Bautista, regional campaign coordinator of the National Day Labor Organizing Network, and Marcela Hernandez, deportation defense coordinator with the Immigrant Youth Coalition. Welcome to Uprising, Claudia and Marcela.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, Claudia, I'd like to start with you. Tell us a little bit about what the media means, and also, you know, what activists mean when you say sanctuary cities. We had last, when we covered this issue, we'd spoken to John Avalos, who is the author in San Francisco. He's a city supervisor, and he had authored the Due Process for All ordinance that keeps separate law enforcement from immigration enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that was in San Francisco. But overall, when you hear the word sanctuary cities, what does that really mean?
That usually means that the local jurisdiction has created a policy for the police or the sheriffs not to turn in immigrants, or when ICE requests for them to be turned in, whenever that person comes into contact with law enforcement. Hmm.
And so it's at the point of contact between law enforcement and the immigrant to not turn them over to immigration authorities.
Yeah.
If that immigrant is committing an actual crime, just as a law enforcement officer would treat a citizen, mm-hmm. that law enforcement officer would deal properly with the immigrant, right?
Yes. The person would follow the same system in terms of being arrested, having a trial, going to jail if they are found guilty, and then after that, then that's when the police department or the sheriff's department makes a decision whether they're gonna talk to ICE about this person or not, or whether they're gonna turn this person in or not.
Mm. Marcela, what has the fallout been of the coordination, in some places more strong than other places, between immigration and law enforcement? How has that impacted communities here?
Yeah, it's been really bad, specifically in Los Angeles, where I grew up. I grew up in a mostly immigrant community where we had a lot of checkpoints, and actually a lot of mothers who were just taking their children to school would get stopped at checkpoints by police, and police would actually hold them for immigration to come and pick them up. So that was immediate separation of families. And also, we recently had a case of...
I mean, these mothers must have been violent criminals for them to do this?
No, and you know, like, you know, they were just taking their children to school. And for us, even, we know that communities of color are hyper-criminalized. So even when people do have, criminal records, we are, you know, I think we've seen a shift in the criminal justice reform system, right? We want to focus more on rehabilitation. When people are turned over to immigration, the community distrusts the police, you know, already. And, like, when they know they're collaborating with immigration, they distrust them even more. And we know that for them to be detained and then deported is double punishment for our communities, instead of really focusing on the root causes of the problem, where, you know, maybe we need more rehabilitation problems. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's what we've been seeing. Like, and also a lot of people that were serving their time in jail were held up to like 48 hours after they were supposed to be released, and that was a violation of their constitutional rights, false imprisonment. So that was one of the fallouts of, you know, local police collaborating with immigration, that it really, you know, impacts families that are just, you know, going on in their every daily life, or people that have already served their time in jail.
And ironically, this is an issue of public safety, right? When we hear the right tackle this issue, to them, if we were to simply deport all immigrants, we would have safer cities. However, if immigration is being contacted every time somebody calls, somebody, you know, gets in contact with the police, doesn't that deter undocumented immigrants from actually calling the police when they see crime happening because they're worried they could get deported?
Yes, and that's one of the things that we have been pushing, and that was the reason why in California the Trust Act was enacted. Unfortunately, when people are only looking at one side of the issue and the safety of one specific part of the population, they're not thinking about the safety of all of the entire, mm-hmm. The entire population in the city.
So what happened yesterday at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing when the Steinle family testified? In media reports ahead of this committee hearing, various members of the family sort of gave various answers about how they feel about immigration. And of course, it shouldn't be up to this one family to decide U.S. policy. Mm-hmm. They have suffered a tremendous and horrific loss. But the brother of the late Kate Steinle said he doesn't believe, for example, in building a big wall on the Mexican mm-hmm. border. What did they say to the Senate Judiciary Committee?
The family?
Mm-hmm.
The dad testified just about their daughter and how a great loss that was. And we are also, we send our condolences to them. But yeah, we believe that although this was a great tragedy, it shouldn't be used to push for legislation that would further criminalize immigrants, mm-hmm. They're using this type of legislation, to push for more criminalization of criminals, and we don't think that's
And is
right.
there a danger of that happening? Could, because of course, especially as we head into mm-hmm. a presidential election, these mm-hmm. sorts of issues become amplified in the media. Is there a danger, even though we know and studies have shown that crime is actually significantly lower mm-hmm. in undocumented communities than it is in the general public, mm-hmm. that in isolated incidents can be blown out of proportion for political gain? Is there a real danger coming out of the Senate Judiciary Committee that what San Francisco, LA, and other cities have done could be overturned or derailed? Marcella?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've been fighting for, sanctuary cities and policies that would keep, American communities safe and just all communities safe for years. And things like this that are blown out of proportion for political gain, take us like years back when there was way more anti-immigrant laws. Definitely we have seen that a lot of politicians and even ICE is using this instance to push for their own political gain, for their own policies. Now after the president in November announced a new national program for undocumented immigrants to get some kind of relief, they also announced a new enforcement program, PEPCOM. We are still not sure, what that's going to entitle, but we definitely know from the memo they took out that is going to focus on people that are recent reentries, people that have some kind of criminal history, misdemeanors, felonies. And we're just seeing ICE using this to push that program and really push it in cities where there's a lot of undocumented community members. And the dangers with that program is that really fuels people into the detention and deportation system. We need to remember that there's a quota of 34,000 people need to be detained every day.
That's a quota?
That's a national quota that Congress has.
Wow.
It's a recommendation that 34,000 people need to be detained every day. And also write that we have had more than 2 million deportations in the last few years. So we do think that they are using it to further incarcerate people. And like I said, President Obama a few days ago said that, we really need to fix our criminal justice system, that, putting people in prison is not going to solve problems. So why are we then, pushing a completely opposite legislation for the undocumented community? I think for me, dealing with helping a lot of these families in detention and deportation, I do see the undocumented community being fueled now in the new population of people that might be incarcerated in the United States for profit.
So with criminal justice reform, citizens may be less likely to be imprisoned, but immigrants may take their place. That's your worry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is definitely my worry. Because, a lot of detention centers are privately run by GEO and CCA, and they make a profit out of everybody.
And these are the same corporations that run a lot of privately run prisons in the
U.S.
Yeah, if we look at the the speech that Obama did, like we said last week, he mentioned overcrowding, but then there's the bed quota and deportation quota for immigrants. He mentioned other prison conditions like rape, and we see like trans immigrants being raped every day. He also mentioned transgender immigrants. Sorry. He also mentioned the decriminalization of drug crimes, but drug crimes are some of the priorities for deportation as well. So this is how we see the double standards in terms of the criminal justice system when it comes to non-citizens. And this affects not only undocumented folks, but also anyone with that is not a citizen, that would be legal permanent residents, that would be documented people, that would be anyone with asylum.
Now, hand in hand with these policies and also the kinds of hearings we see in Washington, D.C., is the racist rhetoric coming out of a lot of the politicians' mouths. Donald Trump, I hesitate to take him seriously, except that a significant portion of Republicans do take him seriously. Mm-hmm. He had a photo op with the very notorious Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona, and you know when he made anti-Latino comments, anti-Mexican comments, his ratings went up. When he criticized John McCain for something less than he was. I guess it depends on what your standards are, how you compare those two criticisms, but certainly that was something that the Republicans thought was unacceptable. Uh-huh. How important is it to pay attention to the rise in racist rhetoric? And we see this, of course, every four years when there's a presidential election.
It's very important. I think, like, it's very dangerous as well. Currently, Donald Trump is the person who is setting the conversation, and people are falling for it. And that's politicians on the left and politicians on the right. So everyone is falling for it, and it's very dangerous to have this person be the one that's setting the conversation in terms of immigration, right? This is the same person that last presidential election kept pushing for Obama to show his certificate.
He's a birther, yeah.
Yeah, and this time around, once again, he's the one creating the conversation and pushing it, the entire conversation to the right.
And of course, the media are complicit in this. There were a couple of studies in the last few days alone that showed how unrepresentative the media is of diverse populations in California. Now, as of July, Latinos are the majority in this state, surpassing whites. And yet, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, or FAIR, studied commentators on NPR shows like Morning Edition and All Things Considered for the first 5 months of this year. And what they found was not a single Latino voice among them. These are regular commentators, almost all white and male. One African-American, a handful of white women, no women of color. And then Media Matters for America studied Sunday news shows and found that Latinos made up just 4% of guests in the first few months of 2015. This is a drop of 42% from the last few months of 2014. So somehow in the first few months of this year compared to the last few months of 2014, 42% drop in Latino representation on Sunday news shows. How does that lack of media representation feed into the racism, feed into these policies?
Yeah, I mean, I think, one of the reasons we are here today is also right to share with the audience that actually today we are hosting a town hall where families who have been affected by detention and deportation and collaboration between local law enforcement and ICE, how they're being affected, how their families have been torn apart, because we do see that misrepresentation even in the hearings, at the sheriff's meetings. We see that advocacy groups and families that have, you know, on the other side have been invited, but not families who have been directly impacted by this issue. So for us, we do want to highlight those, you know, we are aiming to highlight those families that are on the other side of the issue, that are being affected every day and being torn apart, and definitely, creating our own press conferences and media, because we have definitely see a lot of anti-immigrant media coverage, but not enough from the other side. So we do see how that's really affecting the national discourse, not really giving an opportunity for that other side or the families, undocumented immigrant families, to share their stories. I don't know if you want to
think. Yeah, like she said, we saw it at the judiciary commission meeting yesterday where, you know, they had all the families of people who had been killed by undocumented immigrants, yet they didn't have one single family whose family would be separated due to these, like, new policies that they're talking about.
And not to mention undocumented immigrants themselves killed. I mean, recently the news came out of these unbelievably horrific mass graves of undocumented immigrants in Texas on the border. Where are the hearings on that?
Exactly. No, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I see that's, you know, I think when we think about detention and deportation, when people are deported, they do run the risk of being kidnapped or of being killed, either, you know, because of how different conditions are in different countries. And specifically for us, we're mostly concerned about the most vulnerable populations. One of the things that for the new enforcement priority program, they really criminalize people that are just coming into the country. And we do see a small population of queer and trans immigrants coming here seeking asylum. So they would be highly criminalized. And for those folks, for them to return to their country of origin could be a death sentence. And like you said, we had instances of Border Patrol also abusing their power and abusing immigrants and, you know, even killing immigrants. So it is a big concern that SSI, yeah, like you're saying, that is not being heard.
So these all of these issues taken together points to a community that has been under siege now for a few decades at least, certainly under President Obama and very much so, of course, under President Bush, although Obama in the number of deportations has exceeded Bush. But yet he has also made available some limited programs for people to get some temporary relief from deportation, not citizenship or not even a path to citizenship, but temporary relief from deportation. In the last several months or so, President Obama has seemed to shed some of his reluctance at pandering to the right and even the center on some issues in the margins. He seems to be taking bolder steps. He also had been more responsive to the activism of DREAM activists, etc. Do you expect or hope in the last year and a half of his tenure that some of that boldness that he showed on criminal justice, at least rhetoric-wise, may play out on justice for the Latino community and undocumented immigrants? Are there any indications?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like you mentioned, a lot of him doing this kind of statements was because the undocumented youth or the undocumented community was pushing a lot. And I think it was because of the efforts of, you know, undocumented activists that, you know, they really push him for that. I really think we are going to keep organizing our communities to keep pushing him. But I think at this point, we don't know, as we also call him the deported in chief. So I think it's really because of the community that he's been pushed. So it's just, I think this, I know for sure that the community is going to keep pushing him. Yeah. And we hope, right, that we do get a good response, but it's really hard to know at this point.
And also his words on criminal justice, as we're seeing with other politicians, is the result of people's activism pushing them to do something about it. Finally, I'm wondering if the two of you think that there are opportunities for collaboration and ties with the Black Lives Matter movement, as we are seeing a surge in activism from Black communities fighting back against police brutality. There certainly are opportunities for common cause, although, of course, each community does get impacted in different ways.
We are, we are always seeking to do collaboration with any group that shares common interests. We, different groups within the migrant rights movement have done different collaborations with Black Lives Matter on different levels, right? And we hope to continue to do that. I think it's in the best interest of both movements, and we're definitely open and willing to continue that work.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as the Immigrant Youth Coalition, we are seeking more partnerships with other youth groups that focus on against criminalization of communities of color, against police brutality. And I know at the national, for the national movement against detention and deportations, we actually had
Patrice Cullors.
Yes.
Co-founder of Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, Google Hangout us at you know, just about trying to speak about those potential collaborations as we are seeing just, you know, a lot of just communities of color overall being criminalized and being fueled into incarceration. So I think for us, that's the deeper, one of the deeper dialogues that we're having around all of these anti-immigrant conversations is just really fueling more people of color into prisons, detention centers. And we don't think that's the answer. That's not going to stop crime. You know, it's focusing on rehabilitation.
But it's also like understanding that that all these policies that are criminalizing immigrants also set back the work of those of the criminal justice, transformative justice like movement.
Right.
And that's what's important to really like notice is.
I want to thank the two of you so much for joining us today. Unfortunately, we're out of time. My guests are Claudia Batista, Regional Campaign Director and Campaign Coordinator of the National Diablo Labor Organizing Network, and Marcela Hernandez, Deportation Defense Coordinator with the Immigrant Youth Coalition. This is Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar.